Is it me?
I'm here.
Yeah, we're here. Yeah.
Okay.
You're all there.
Here. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Hold on.
Oh, no, you've either frozen or...
You're very still.
Oh,
you're
bloody
very
still.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's back.
Yeah. Well, like I'm sort of Les Dawson, I'm so good at technology, I can balls it up deliberately.
Yeah.
Another top reference.
Yeah.
I think
guess
we found
what?
Out.
I'm not. Okay, hopefully I'm back.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can now.
So Oxford United Twitter has been quite a rich kind of place for stupid content for quite a long time now. Twitter is obviously going down the toilet quite a lot, but part of the things that has kind of linked people like us together is the stupid kind of off the cuff, slightly silly stuff on Twitter. So it's the kind of the parallel content to Oxford United, not the grown-up sensible stuff about, you know, well, what they would talk about XG and, you know, high presses and stuff like that. It's more the stuff that the stupid twats at the back of the stands talk about, basically. Yeah. So Rosie is wearing official Oxblogger merchandise for this podcast, which is a dark blue T-shirt with left side written in yellow wording. And just wondering how big a money spinner the Oxblogger merch range has been.
Yeah, I think I've sold... actually, I think it was you who triggered the initial launch, because I was mucking around with something like a T-shirt designing service, and somebody said, we should have T-shirts with this printed on. I can't remember what it was. And I went, oh, actually, I had a bunch of those T-shirts just designed up, ready to go, if I would be brave enough to sell them. And I think I sold about 10 in that evening. And I thought, I'm rich. If I do this for the next 2 to 3 years and like 10 times as much, if I can make it, build it up, then I can retire. And I think I probably sell about one every 6 months, maybe. And I think
they're still selling.
Yeah. They're still available. It's only because I haven't shut it down. It's like everything on the blog, really. It's all broken, but I can't be bothered to sort it out. So, so it's on there. I think the T-shirts sell for about £25 or something, and I get £2.
That was another thing that Tim Williams mentioned, wasn't it? About how how great it was that the retail was doing so well in December.
What was that? So there, in the Tim Williams, the chief executives, like he did, he made a point, didn't he? Here we go then. So this is a message from the chief executive, Tim Williams. Continue to see incredible attendance figures. Sign-ups to our membership scheme have risen, and we have significantly increased our investment in our brand and our match day activations. I've put some thought into this. I have absolutely no idea what a match day activation is. Any ideas?
Match day activation.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's the language of the fans, isn't it? That I mean,
yeah.
On the terraces and in the pubs around Oxford beforehand, we're all talking
all
about
we
the
match
day activation.
Match day activation. That's
it. Yeah. P.S. Chris Hackett. I mean, it's just the daftest non-statement of all time.
Manager of the shop.
Sorry, I know. Is Chris Hackett the deputy? What's the assistant manager? And we don't have a manager. Is that right? So obviously, the other day we had the recall of the entire cohort of loan players, and I was sort of looking back on some of the loans. I mean, a bad loan is hard to define, because most loans don't really do anything in particular. They're just sort of, you know, loans. You want loans to go really bad, but then they just don't get game time. So, like Atif Konate, was that a bad loan? Because he did play for us, didn't he? He played for us.
Do we know what's happened to him this season? I mean, what have we got to compare it with?
So he's still at Forest.
Is that because nobody else wanted to take him on loan? No.
I'm guessing he's Forest. Running down his contract as opposed to kind of knocking on the manager's door. Ben Woodburn?
Yeah.
2 years ago. Yep. He's now at Preston, which really surprised me because I thought his career was complete toast.
A lot of it will come down to what the purpose of the loan was. So as the receiving club, you want a player who's effectively going to contribute to your season's campaign, whether that's avoiding relegation, successfully finishing mid-table, or getting promoted or whatever. But from the loaning club as well, they presumably have a target, just as we would when we've got like James Golding down at wherever it was that we recalled James Golding from. Like, we want them to get game time. So I think, so for example, Atif Kanate's loan, that wasn't a successful loan, was it? Who was the other guy that we had at the same time? Somebody Smith.
Tyler Smith.
Tyler Smith, of course.
It's one of your Tylers.
Tyler's one of the three.
I mean,
four now.
I agree. I mean, it's about player development in most instances, or it's just about desperation in others, offloading people, getting rid of wages, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But it is hard to define because, and I was thinking back to last season, and arguably Carl Joseph was a fairly successful loan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so.
And I'd also suggest that Lewis Bate was until he got injured.
But yeah.
You have to go back quite some way to find that a loanee was absolutely kind of integral part of the squad, integral to a successful season. And John Joe Kenny was the one that sprang to mind.
That, as you said, that was the first name that came to 2016. My mind.
2016.
Yeah.
And it obviously worked out for him as well because he ended up, he ended up back at Everton and played for them for quite a while, covering injured players. And now he's still at Hertha Berlin.
The nature of loans has changed significantly. Back in the day, a loan was genuinely a loan. It was like, you've got a problem, so you pluck somebody from another club for a month just to kind of plug that problem. And now, you don't have those... I don't think you can do it, even. Can you, apart from a goalkeeper, maybe? You can't bring a player in for a month just because you happen to have an injury crisis. They have to come in for a season. So it's like a one-year contract. A one-year contract which can then be curtailed halfway through seems completely unreasonable to me.
So I think you can get a goalkeeper on emergency loan still if COVID or something wipes out your entire squad. But the Beadle thing is just blows my mind. If it's a season-long loan, over these clubs to insist on that, and we just kind of get what we're given.
There's a slightly ludicrous situation now, and I don't remember if this was the case before or whether this is new, but loans now are entirely determined by the transfer windows as well. I'm sure once upon a time you could just kind of loan in and out during the season, but now it's actually part of the transfer process, and for my mind, that is entirely dictated by the big clubs wanting to use the loan market. It's essentially is a we want a 50 person squad, but we're only allowed a maximum of whatever it is, 26. So we just use it as a way of moving people out. Mm. Do you remember Todd Kane?
Mm-hmm.
So he was with us in like 2018. So I just had a quick look at his stats. So he was with us from Chelsea. He joined Chelsea at 19 years old. He was there for 7 years. So like basically the prime of his career, he was at Chelsea. He spent periods on loan at Preston North End, Blackburn Rovers, Bristol City, Nottingham Forest, NEC, I'm not even going to try and pronounce that, Groningen, Oxford United and Hull City, before he finally went out and had two clubs where he spent 2 seasons at QPR, 2 seasons at Coventry City, and he now plays for Manchester 62 in the what's it called? The Gibraltar Football League. You know, he's a talented enough footballer to get, sort of 100 games between QPR and Coventry City. And he spent most of that basically on loan, getting snatches of games here and there. How can that process be good for footballers or football if somebody's spent... I mean, he may be an extreme example, but that's that's not how football's meant to go for somebody, a young, talented young kid's career.
It really highlights, though, I guess, just how easy it is for big clubs to stockpile players, because their wages are attractive enough for the likes of Todd Kane and others who've not made it through the Chelsea ranks. But actually, maybe that's the bigger attraction. It's been able to build a nest egg for what is quite a short career. I don't know.
This is why I think that Kemar Roofe was an interesting one, because he was one of the only players who has actually just dropped down the leagues, had a successful loan with us and then decided to sign for us to sort of better his career rather than just sit in the West Brom reserves or under 20, whatever it is. You know, he came to us and he made a name for himself and made a reputation for himself. And I've always had a lot of time for Kamaris. Whatever happens to him with his career, I think, you know, that was exemplary, really. And I think it's a shame that more players don't do that.
Well, we went through a period where, and under Michael Appleton, where he was able to persuade enough players to follow that kind of path, because Lundstrom wasn't alone, but did the same sort of thing. To some degree, Jonjo Kenny was a similar kind of deal. Drop down and then we'll progress your career. I know Jonjo Kenny didn't sign for us ultimately, but that story, that narrative, is, I don't think, is being, you know, that's not common. That's that, like you say, Roofe is an exception to the rule. But you've got to regulate the game so that happens more often. Because I think that's part of the problem at the moment, is there's no regulation. So, I know because of the disparity in money. The reason we get fleeced by people like Brighton over James Beadle is because they can.
It just feels like a no-win situation, though, because with the likes of Beadle, he plays in a decent team, but is able to kind of prove himself as well. And as a result of that, they think, oh, he can step up a level. And, you know, I don't understand why someone his age can't have stayed another 6 months. It's not a long time in a footballer's career at that age. It's interesting. So going back to like the likes of Roofe, Ledson and the like, I think another really good example is Joe Rothwell. We did sign him, didn't we? And now he's playing Premier League football week in, week out. That was our model for a few seasons. And it's amazing how quickly that model has become completely redundant and completely impossible. We've gone from that whole ethos of getting in players who can't make it into the first team of Premier League clubs, developing them, and also kind of this unwritten promise that, you know, if you get the opportunities to go higher again, we'll let you go and we make money from it and everybody won. And it's just blows my mind how quickly that model has just become virtually impossible, I'd say, or much more rare.
It makes it incredibly difficult for football clubs like us to plan any kind of a season. And the ability just to withdraw a player halfway through the season and just plough them off to a team that's ostensibly seven places higher in the football pyramid, appreciate he's going to be facing significantly better opposition at Sheffield Wednesday. But that's incredibly frustrating. I think my only slight kind of caveat to the frustration that I have there is, and because the rules are different with us in non-league teams, that is what we do all the time. We've recalled James Golding basically because Des Buckingham wanted to have a look at him and just to weigh up what our squad was. And we've probably kept him around because our squad is a bit thin at the moment, just in general terms, but also because of injuries. And we do that to teams in non-league. So whilst I really do get that frustration around the James Beadle situation, it is something that we are also doing to other clubs. And, you know, but it is important to those clubs as well. And I appreciate they go into those loan deals aware that we can just recall them at a moment's notice. But, you know, they still have seasons to prepare for and to plan, right?
Yeah, we'll have to start scouring the strong arm training pictures to see if James Golding is in any of them. See if he's there during the week.
What?
The club's tweeting.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. The muscle emoji, the bicep emoji. Yeah.
Monday morning.
Yeah, I preparing love that. For the weekend.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just, I mean, it's just so disingenuous. I'm just looking at Instagram now, 25 minutes ago, got Tyler Bury pointing at me.
I don't think that's personal.
It doesn't look aggressive, but, you know, pointing's pointing. The quote is, "This was my number one. As soon as Oxford came in, I said, I'm coming. It was a no-brainer for me." Now, we know for a fact that we spent all of last summer trying to attract him. We know that he came here because he said that in the interview. I just assume everything's gone completely pear-shaped for him in Denmark, and we're plan B again. I mean, I'm quite happy he's here, and you know, he seems like a good prospect, but yeah, I just do struggle with this sort of this attempt to control a narrative that doesn't exist.
Is he buzzing to get started? I bet he is.
I'm pretty confident he is, yeah.
They're all buzzing to get started.
Yeah, no, I think he is quoted as saying he can't wait to get started. Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's the only footballer who's ever said that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you, that's actually not enough for me. I don't want him to be looking forward to or can't wait to. I want somebody who is pumped or is buzzing or is...
Preferably with a strong arm emoji.
Yeah, absolutely. What I want, actually, is I want a footballer who's champing at the bit to get started. Ooh. That's what we need.
Biting at the top. Was it you said biting at the top, was it?
Brannigan? Yeah. I think he was biting at the top to get started.
I mean, that probably was true of in his case.
How quickly did you get blocked by Brannigan's dad when he signed? Were you part of that cohort?
Really? Yeah. Said, it wasn't anything, it wasn't critical of him. It was maybe just critical of how he was being used or something.
I can remember exactly what I said to get blocked by Cameron Brannigan's dad. I said, Cameron Brannigan looks like a really good prospect, but... he's wasted it defensive midfield and something along the lines of he's not cut out to play there. We really need to see him play further forward. And his dad went on a big rant at me saying he's not cut out for this and all of that kind of stuff, and then instantly blocked me. And it was 2 weeks after that Carl Robinson then pushed Cameron Brannigan forward, and all of a sudden we started winning football matches.
So you're taking credit.
Full credit for that. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think I'm misremembering because I was thinking that's what I'd said, but no, it was what you'd said. All I'd said was, why is everybody following Cameron Brannigan's dad? And then he blocked me.
I don't know why, because
I quite clearly wasn't interested in what he was saying, so I don't know why he then decided he needed to block me.
It was around that time where we signed a lot of players who then subsequently got injured very quickly, and then we had a spate of them. So I tweeted something along the lines of, looking forward to seeing Cameron Brannigan making his debut in 6 to 8 months after he's recovered from his ACL injury. That was
don't recall ever following Cameron Brannigan's dad, and so maybe I'm blocked without even knowing it. Perhaps he blocks me for not following him. I don't know. It sounds about. That sensitivity levels probably could be the case. Yeah. I mean, to balance things out, I did have quite a nice DM exchange with Michael Raines back in the day about renting my sister's house in Bicester. It didn't happen in the end, but he seemed like a lovely chap.
Football has definitely changed since then.
I mean, they seem to gravitate towards Bicester as well. I nearly ran over Mark Sykes in Bicester. they put fences round the sides of paths to stop you from crossing there. Not if you're Mark Sykes. He does what he wants, as the song goes.
Yeah,
nearly paid the ultimate price, silly boy.
Just coming back to loans, just for a second, because I have a bit of a theory, which Beadle is almost unique. I cannot think of a goalkeeping loan that we haven't hated. Almost every goalkeeper. I go back to Neil Cutler, and he took over loans. Yeah, so he came from Aston Villa and took over from Richard Knight.
God, awesome.
And we were shipping goals like nobody's business. And Richard Knight was still the best player in the team.
Yeah, he won player of the. I'm sure he won player of the season that year.
Yes, he did. Yeah. We conceded like 100 yards or something, and he all he did was come in and play.
To be fair, I hated him because he was shit. I didn't hate him because of him. But if you go back a bit further, I would say, you know, Ian Walker and Paul Gerrard were quite popular.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Gerrard pulled off one of the greatest saves I've ever seen with my own eyes. It was away to Sheffield United in about 98. We won 2-1. Nicky Banger, sausage, scored from a free kick, I think. But yeah, Gerrard was remarkable. So, yeah.
Banger scored from a free kick, or he scored a free kick?
That's just semantics, isn't it? Oh, no, he scored a...
Imagining.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so
one free kick.
He scored a direct free kick, I think, if my memory serves me right. Yeah. So, United just posted another Tyler Bury video on Instagram. He's raring to go. Yellow heart emoji. Nice.
It's to create the illusion that we've signed five players.
Yeah. All called Tyler.
If we were looking, you know, if we were kind of hunting for him over the summer, did you know this? Every other podcast probably will say that they knew this and were aware of this going on. I mean, I quite like the idea that we are the most uninformed podcast that is available.
Yeah.
I've never heard of him.
Absolutely.
His name was all over the internet all last summer. It's like the player that we were desperate to get.
All over the internet. That's a big old place over, isn't it?
Given the amount of Instagram posts we're putting out about him, I guess they're trying. So on social media, it seemed to be like a kind of very well-known secret that he was. But now I'm doubting myself. Was it last summer or summer 22? No,
it was. It was the summer just gone. So he was a guy that we were attempting to get over the summer. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I do tend to go back quite a long way because I don't really remember much after sort of 2002. But 94-95, when we were absolutely storming the league, we started unbelievably. By November, I think Paul Moody had scored like 17 goals. We were top, looking like we were absolutely going to just walk the league because we'd just been relegated and then just seemingly everybody got injured, just everybody, the entire squad. And we had, going back onto brilliant loans, had people like Guy Butters and Tony Dobson on loan. And then the whole season just went to shit and we ended up outside the playoffs.
How many games did Tony Dobson play?
Probably not that many because I think he was like a month-long loan as well. But, you know, if you've got... Obviously, when Matt Elliott's injured, that's the sort of calibre of player you're going to bring in to replace him.
So Dobson played five times for us, and Wikipedia said he started his professional career at Coventry at the age of 8. I mean, that seems quite young to sign professional contract to
that's
me.
That's how bad it was that season. We were playing 8-year-olds.
The greatest loan season of all time was Michael Appleton's first season, 2014, 2015. So apparently we had 14 loan players throughout the season. I mean, I can either read them out to you or you can try and guess them and we'll see who's left over. And there's one particular who for some reason he's my Tony Dobson.
Yeah.
He's stuck in my head, but it turns out that he was a very short-term loan. So do you want to try and... 14 players we got in that season.
Carlton Morris.
Yes.
Who I think is actually doing quite well now, isn't he? Kubiak.
Yes.
Oh, from Watford.
We were talking about him the other day. Junior Brown.
No, I think he was a proper signing, but he didn't last very long.
Oh, did we sign him? Oh no, we fucked him off after that Cambridge match. But there was Will someone. Kemar Roof.
Yes.
Am I allowed to cheat because I wasn't living in Oxfordshire that time?
Well, how are you cheating?
Yeah, what, by just reading it out?
Are you not enjoying this? Sorry. Am I not entertaining enough for you? Is this
No, you very much are. I was just explaining why I'm completely quiet.
No.
Oh, I can see one. I can see one. I'll give you a clue. Right back, all the many an Oxford United supporter had a crush on.
George Baldock.
Yes.
Yeah, Baldock was, yeah.
The one.
Yeah, of course.
One of two loans.
Gorgeous George.
Wasn't he good, though, and attractive?
He was the whole package, wasn't he?
He really was.
When
there's another keeper, isn't there?
Oh, Ashworth.
No.
Is he signing as well?
I think Ash he was. This is the tricky bit, isn't it? I think he was a short term signing as opposed to a loan. There was a lot of short term signings as well.
Mm. And there was someone that we signed. I think he was quite a good striker, but he was always injured. Was it Will? Is there a Will someone? I'm sure there's a Will. Like
there isn't. Yes, there isn't there a Will. Is there?
Will.
Oh no, he's a signing.
Yeah.
Sorry, he was a signing for a season.
Oh, okay.
Will Hoskins.
Hoskins, that's it.
There's a clue. There's another keeper who played a few times, had the same surname as a player who's been at our club still is for a long time. Yes.
Can I just going to jump in here? I was hugely disillusioned with the football club during this season, so I was barely paying attention.
Okay.
So it's just you.
edit the excuses in nice and early.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's somebody who, an Italian-sounding player, who was actually from Banbury, apparently, came on loan and played one game. It's not very fair, is it? Giorgio Rassulo.
Do you know what? And that's really annoying, because I nearly said that.
I remember him at all.
I remember this guy. I remember him because he was a Chesterfield player, and the Chesterfield fans called him Dave because, in their ignorance, they couldn't be bothered to try and even say his name. But Armand Danduye, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
And he's currently in Ligue 2 for Dunkirk.
That's a reasonable level.
Yeah, he's 31 now. Yeah. He was at Le Mans last season. And did all right, 20 goals in 48 games.
Mm.
To be sniffed at.
No.
So the others, just
the thing with Le Mans, of course, they just play all their games within 24 hours, don't they? So it's kind of...
Yeah, very good.
Macrin, I'd imagine.
So there was Joe Riley, who I think was from Bolton.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Riley. Tyrone Barnett.
Yeah. Tyrone Barnett. Yeah.
I think he scored against Shrewsbury, or he came from Shrewsbury. I can't remember which one of that those two was, but we tried to sign him, I think, and we couldn't get him. Tariq Holmes Dennis, who shined for a very, very brief time. Che Dunkley, who apparently came on
loan. I was going to say Dunks.
Oh. Yeah.
Wes Burns, who...
right.
Yeah. Kyle Vassell.
Remember him.
Yeah.
And the one who's... for some reason, sticks in my head, is Richard Brindley. And his loan period lasted 10 days. He plays three times. We won the first one, we drew the second one, we lost the third one, and then they got rid of him. Clearly, there was a trend there. But amazingly, he's still playing at a decent level.
He's
Notts County.
Ah,
so top of League Two, isn't it? But somewhere up there.
Yeah. I wonder if that's the shortest ever loan, apart from Bruce Grobbelaar, maybe.
So this has reminded me of another footballer that we had in the 15-16 season, which was I'm not going to do it justice because it was really strange, but we had him on loan. I'm just going to tell you his name. It was Cameron Gale, and we had him on loan, I think, on a 1 month deal. He didn't play any games for us, and then we signed him, I think, on a one-year deal, and then immediately loaned him to Cambridge United. He then played four games for Cambridge United and then disappeared off to Sutton Coldfield Town after we released him from his contract.
Mm.
And it was just the weirdest
signing. It was really... I don't think anyone was really sure what was going on with him, were they, at the time? It was all quite confusing.
And it was whilst obviously Michael Appleton did a lot of really, really good stuff for us, a lot of obviously, I mean, he's one of my favourite managers of all time. There were some slightly strange things going on when he was around. There was that university kid that we signed straight out of university.
Johnny Giles?
Yeah, because he had sent us a bunch of YouTube videos, I think, and we liked the look of him. So we signed him and then he never played.
No.
But, this is completely off topic and a completely different, not that we've been on topic at any point. Because one area I wanted to, I was hoping we might get to, is outfield players as goalkeepers. And the reason, this is purely selfish because I was looking at this today, because Mike Ford played in goal for us in November 1989 against Hull. I don't know if you remember. So he signed for us, I think just after we got relegated and from the First Division, and then injured himself, was out for 6 months because he'd done his back in on his honeymoon.
Strong so, emoji.
So weak back emoji.
But as a result, he was out for 6 months, and he was kind of really, fans were very much against him and didn't like him. Then he took over. Mm. So against Hull, apparently this was after 29 minutes, and Alan Judge apparently did his knee ligaments after half an hour, and Ford was on the bench. Brian Horton turned to him and basically said, "Do you fancy going in goal?" And he said, "Yes." And that kind of turned his whole Oxford United career around, was that performance. Yeah. Kept a clean sheet for an hour, which was pretty good. But the thing I really liked, so I looked this up, I tried to find a newspaper cutting of it. The Sunday Mercury was the only reference to it, and referenced the game as a dreadful match in which Oxford United were missing striker John Dernan, who had been left out due to him facing a drink driving charge. And in the final minute, Billy Whitehurst was playing for Hull and had a chance to win it when he broke through with only Ford to beat, but then tripped over himself and the ball went harmlessly wide. That was the entirety of the news. That was the entirety of the match report for that game. I just, something wonderfully kind of late 80s, early 90s about that little story. So I just wanted to chuck that one in.
Yeah, that was my first season, but I didn't go to that match. But I do remember everybody hating Mike Ford to begin with.
Drinks in my local. There we go.
Aww,
tied up nicely at the end.
He's one of the. I'll never have a bad word about Fordy. I don't want to know.
I have actually interviewed Mike Ford, and I was quite scared. Now I've been shouted at by Chris Wilder, so being scared of Mike Ford, I shouldn't have been. But he was absolutely lovely. Mm. Like honestly, like the nicest guy. And I mean, still quite intimidating. I felt like half a man next to him. But very, very nice.
It's similar with, I put on the thing the other day about that I saw Anton Rogan in Bladen, walking through Bladen, looking very hungover. Now, I grew up in Bladen and he actually lived across the road from my mum and dad. So I do kind of know him. And whenever I see him, he always says hello and he always gives me a hug. But I'm still kind of, oh my God, that's Anton Rogan. Which is silly because he's handsome.
No, he's not.
He's not
just
Rogan.
Exactly. It's Anton Rogan.
Right, we're going to
wrap up. Yeah.
I think so.
I need to remember to have dinner before we start, I think.
Well, yeah. And a wee.
Wait.